Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In his new book, Originals, How Nonconformists Move the World, author Adam Grant sets out to challenge the default, unlock creativity, and explore originality. It's a fascinating look at why we settle for the status quo and what it takes to work outside the box. He uses examples ranging from the tech world, Google, to the entertainment world, Seinfeld. Grant is a best-selling author behind Give and Take, A Revolutionary Approach to Success, published back in 2013, and he's a professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. It's my pleasure to welcome Adam Grant to The Download. Adam, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin. Great to be here.
I got to ask you, it's about conforming versus originality. What drew you to this topic?
Well, when I went to college, I met a bunch of my future classmates online. We were all heading across the country, and we kind of built this email group. And we arrived at Harvard, and there was an article about us having created the first online social network. And none of us had the thought that maybe we should turn this into something. And then 4 years later, in the dorm next door, Mark Zuckerberg starts Facebook. And yeah, a lot of these people who are in it were kicking themselves. Mark's idea was much better. But we've all had those moments where we have ideas or suggestions and we don't act on them. And I wanted to know how we could close the gap.
I mean, that's a big part of this book, is about trying to analyze what works, what doesn't. I mean, you talk about even in your life about some things you wanted to invest in and you didn't, but it went huge. But also, you know, you talk to so many different people to get examples about what it means to have an idea, what it means to push an idea forward. I mean, it really is a playbook for entrepreneurs.
Well, thank you. That you be the judge of that.
What I like about it, though, is it's not just about someone who wants to start a business. I mean, it really applies to people's everyday lives.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about originality, it's not I have to be a sort of a Steve Jobs icon, right? It's about looking at the world around you and asking, how could it be better? And then doing something about it. That may mean making a suggestion at your workplace. It could be, you know, trying to fix a rule that doesn't make sense in your school or your community. We all have that urge to be nonconformists, and then we worry about standing out and we choose to fit in instead.
One of the big topics in this book, or at least ideas, is around the idea of the default. The idea of using the default and thinking in a default way. Explain that.
Well, the easiest way to explain it is through the internet browser. So, as you know, Justin, we can predict your job performance and how long you stick around by what browser you use on your computer.
That's crazy. Okay. The actual browser that I use to look at the internet.
Some people don't like hearing about the results of this study, but it turns out that Chrome and Firefox users are, on average, better performers, and they stay 15% longer than Internet Explorer and Safari users. It's not that, you know, the first two groups are like tech savvy or computer geeks. It's about how you got the browser. Because Internet Explorer and Safari were pre-installed on your computer, and you just accepted the default option that was handed to you. If you wanted Chrome or Firefox, you had to just ask, is there another option out there, and then take a little initiative to get it. And so, you know, that's what I think about is, you know, we all have these choices every day, right, where there's a default option that's handed to us, and we could just accept the status quo, or we could challenge it and try to improve on it. And that kind of thinking is the starting point for originality.
The one thing that I love about the book is that it's not just about, hey, you know what, you should be more original. I mean, it really is kind of examining how you get there, because there are things, you know, there are how you deal with an original idea, how you deal with the status quo. I mean, you talk about the CIA agent who she kept complaining about things aren't right, things are right, things are right. And because of the way that it was set up and the power structure and everything, people weren't listening to her, and she got frustrated. And it seemed like, you know, it felt like any office that you work in.
Yeah, actually, the CIA is strangely familiar when you look at Carmen Medina's experience. There's several things I learned from that example that tracked beautifully with research. But the biggest thing was she was trying to exercise power before she had status. And people hate that. Often we think power and status go hand in hand, but they're different. Power is authority and influence. Status is respect. And if you go around trying to tell other people what to do before you've earned their respect, they push back. So here she is, a junior, you know, analyst at the CIA, saying, yeah, this whole idea of like having printed intelligence reports doesn't make sense. We should be, you know, using the internet to share ideas. People, first of all, think she's crazy, and secondly, think she's a threat to national security in the 1990s. And eventually she realizes, there's a Francis Ford Coppola quote that captured this so nicely. He said, sometimes you have to double-cross the establishment but first become part of the establishment.
Right.
And that's what Carmen had to do. She had to prove that she was a valued employee. She had to contribute to others. She had to actually get a job that allowed her to make other people safe and prevent against security leaks. And once she built up that credibility, it was a lot easier to
say. Built up that status, right?
Exactly. Right. You know, like people are like, okay, this is somebody we ought to listen to. Now we ought to have a Wikipedia for intelligence.
It reminds me, I mean, there's so many times that you're in an office environment where someone will say, I really don't like what we're doing here. We could do it better. But maybe they don't have an idea and they don't have that status. And it does grind things to a halt. And it comes off as negative behavior. So there really is some rules when it comes to challenging the status quo.
There are. And you know, one of those is if you're going to point out that the emperor has no clothes, you might want to be a good tailor. But I think sometimes we push that too far. And we expect people to have a problem fully figured out and solved before they present it. And if that's the case, you're only ever going to get solutions to easy problems.
Right.
And I think we need to make it safe for people to be able to say, look, I see this problem. Here are a couple ideas that I have for how we might address it, but would love some advice and feedback. How would you think about this?
And there is a chapter in the book where we talk about the layers, about the idea that an idea is just the beginning. It needs to be built upon. It's almost like a painting or added to. But in our society, and especially when it comes to nonconformists, the way they're viewed is like, you better come here with this idea ready to go. If not, continue to use Internet Explorer.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You've either totally figured out how to change the world or go home. And, you know, there are very few people that can actually succeed under those circumstances. I think that one of the best ways to overcome that is there's an exercise that I've watched a lot of teams go through and leaders find valuable, which is called Kill the Company. So you gather a group of people together and you spend some time, 30 minutes, maybe an hour, brainstorming about how to put your organization out of business. I've never seen executives more energized. They're like, I've been waiting 23 years to destroy this organization. But then they have to turn around and figure out, you know, okay, somebody else is probably coming up with similar ideas. How do we defend against those threats or seize those opportunities? And you find that people are much more original when they're on offense than defense. On defense, they play it safe. They're too cautious. On offense, they are willing to drill into some really unusual possibilities and seeing them through. And I think it's a great way to sort of move people toward a solution mindset without them feeling too threatened.
You know, what another take you have on ideas and playing outside the box is volume. You know, you talked to Ira Glass a little. You know, he's got a great quote in the book about if you want to be an original, do huge volumes of work. And your example is about the greatest musicians in the world. I mean, Bach, Beethoven, they'll show up on the list of the best or the top songs of all time, 5-6 of them. But their work, they produce 2,500 songs. But the idea, there is something in continuing to put your head down and come up with ideas and to build and create volume.
Yeah, most people think the opposite, that the more quantity you have, the lower your quality will be. And that's backward. Because in order to do something original, you need variety, right? You need something that's different and better than what came before. The easiest way to get to variety is volume. So the study of classical composers, I think, is ingenious. You look at their greatness. You want to know how many times are their compositions re-recorded? Mm-hmm. How many pages do they get in encyclopedias? How much do experts admire them? And you see that one of the best predictors of greatness is just the sheer number of compositions they generated. So, you know, Mozart, 600 or so, to get a much smaller number of masterpieces. And, you know, what happens is you see that in every field, originals don't have better ideas than their peers. They just have more of them. And, you know, through just, in some cases, sheer luck, when they generate more ideas, they've got a better shot at stumbling on something good.
Now, okay, so for someone listening out there who says, okay, I get it. I have to come up with more ideas. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to do things. I mean, there are ways in this book that you talk about that, but what would be your recommendation to someone who's like, all right, well, where do I start? What do I do to become an original?
I think the best place to start is to try to have more of those moments where you question the default. And you can do that by trying to have the opposite of déjà vu. It's called vujade. Which is a great experience. We all enjoy it when it happens, where you're looking at something you've seen many times before, but now you look at it with fresh eyes. So imagine that you're standing in line waiting for a taxi. And you know, you've done this tons of times in your life, but suddenly you look around and there are all these passing cars with empty seats. And you begin to wonder, why can't I have one of those? And then Uber is born.
Mm-hmm.
That's a vujade moment. And I think that a lot of times people don't have them, right? They just take for granted assumptions that should be questioned. And even when they do have them, they don't do anything about them. So what I would do is I would say, look at the world around you. What frustrates you constantly? What rules don't make sense to you? What systems seem to be broken? And then if you were going to go back to the start and meet the people who designed them, knowing everything we know today, what would you do differently? And so often that line of thinking leads to a new insight.
You kind of break the book down into, we're not going to get to all of it, but obviously risk at the top, choices, which is an interesting contrast to the idea of volume, volume, volume. But there's also this idea of the delay. When is the right time to put something out? When's the right time? I mean, this happens a lot in businesses, people starting. They start too early, or they come up with an idea 5 years before somebody else does. So there is this balancing act between volume, put it out there when it's not perfect, and figuring out the right time to put it out.
Yeah, I'll resolve that for you later.
Exactly.
Now, I think this is one of the hard parts about being original is, you know, we have a lot of great evidence and scientific advice, but many of the decisions that you make as an individual person are much more art. And I think the best way that I can try to reconcile this is to borrow some advice from a great positive psychology expert, Reb Rebeli, who actually posed the same question. He said, well, on the one hand, you're saying, you know, we need to act in advance and see things differently and kind of imagine the future in a way that nobody else anticipated. On the other hand, you should, you know, give ideas time to germinate. And you should have lots of ideas, but then you need to test them. And he said, the key to being original is that you want to be quick to start but slow to finish. So you start working on your ideas ahead of schedule. You then, when you're struggling to make progress on them because they're hard, then you move to the next idea, mm-hmm. and you start developing that one. And then in the back of your mind, you will often have sort of a, you know, light bulb moment about the previous idea. And you have a bunch of ideas sort of working in tandem, and you start to see which ones look promising based on feedback that you get.
The other parts of this book about sustaining originality, a lot to do with siblings and kids and raising kids. I mean, that's tremendous. That's a whole other segment about child prodigies and how they don't always turn out to be the leaders in you'd think they're going to be. Also, how creativity works with troublemakers. There's so much great stuff in here.
You weren't supposed to read the book. But
and then the last thing is about what holds us back. But the one thing that I thought was really important is you say at the beginning of the book that you wanted to share wisdom about how you could be more original without jeopardizing your relationships, reputations, and careers. It's not about right now turning on the light bulb and saying, you know what, yeah, screw this place, you know, and jeopardizing or I mean, that at the beginning, it's not just about building a business, but it's about your relationships, all those kind of things as well.
Yeah, I was very surprised by this nationally representative study of entrepreneurs that looks at the risk takers who quit their day jobs and they go all in and say, you know, I got to go for broke. This is a great idea. Here I go. And then the much more cautious, risk-averse people who I identify far more with, they're like, I don't know if this is going to work, and I don't want to, you know, destroy my plan. So I'm going to keep my day job and start my business as a hobby. That second group is 33% less likely to fail. And, you know, I think so many people feel pressure to say, look, you know, if I'm going to do something, I have to be all in. Yes, you have to be all in at some point, but not at the start. And I think the best thing you can do is any new idea you have, you start tinkering with it on the side and you begin to see if it has legs. And if it does, then at some point you will have a much more rational decision to make about, is this viable?
The book is called Originals, How Nonconformists Move the World. The author is Adam Grant, who's a professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. Adam, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight.
Delighted. Thank you.